Hi, it's Karen Webster, and welcome to Data Drivers, our weekly show where we tell the story about a topic in payments using only three data points. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Tole Kovetsky, the VP at Trulio. Tole, thanks for joining me today. And how did I do with pronouncing your last name?
Karen, you were awesome, so I appreciate the effort. My full name's Anatoly Kvitnitsky, Tole for short. Thank you for having me. Excited to be on the show.
I'm excited to have you too, and we're going to talk about a topic that has so many different aspects to it, and that is the challenges associated with KYC or KYB, knowing the customer or the business, and onboarding those businesses or customers when they walk into a financial institution and want to open an account. And so, obviously, timely topic. Lots of challenges always, but certainly more so now that we've had so many breaches of personal data and account data, the most recent of which obviously is Equifax. So, Tole, let's dive in. And I'm going to start us off with a data point that I think is pretty shocking, and that is 30%. That is the number of people, corporate respondents, who said that the time to onboard these new customers or businesses exceed 2 months, and 10% of those say it's in excess of 4 months. I mean, I find that stunning. It certainly isn't moving at the speed of business, is it?
No, it's not. So that's why we see, you know, the new world payment processors like PayPal just overtaking American Express in market value in the past week. Now, let me go through what exactly that means. So say you, Karen, or my Tole LLC is signing up, you know, we're walking into a bank, we say we open up our business and we want to take payments. So that is when the process starts, and it takes anywhere from 1 to 2, sometimes 4 months, particularly out in Europe, to get from that point A all the way down to accepting payments from the bank. What the new payment processors are doing is cutting that down to minutes. So usually sub 5 minutes, like in the cases of the PayPals, the Stripes, the Braintrees of the world. And it all starts with KYC upfront. So a bank might be, you know, photo scanning your driver's license, your passport, and then doing manual research on whether it's valid or not, while taking a product like TrueView and plugging our API into just a strictly online website or mobile app and verifying the person's identity that way. It's instant, usually 1 to 2 seconds, and then the account is up and running within minutes and able to take payments. So if you're starting a business and ready to take payments, you know, I don't think it's much of a question of which route sounds more appealing to the business owner.
Yeah, no, for sure. So, but obviously there must be more to it. I mean, you can onboard someone in, you know, sub 5 minutes and get them up and going, but there's probably a lot of other things that happen once that process happens as well. How are you supporting the ongoing investigation, if you will, of that individual or business?
Yeah, absolutely. So in a lot of countries, particularly in Europe, you have to re-verify all of your customers, you know, 1 to 2 times a year, depending on the country. And we definitely support all of our customers in doing that. And then we're also adding monitoring features to make sure, you know, if someone that you onboarded and was clean is not popping up on any watch list as they get updated as well, or even adverse media as well. So all of those things we're helping our clients meet, you know, on an ongoing basis. But at the start, I mean, it all starts with the KYC. The ongoing monitoring, ongoing support is definitely secondary to that first experience, either with a bank or an online payments tool to get a merchant onboarded. And, you know, plugging in easy-to-use APIs is a really great start to reduce that time from months all the way down to minutes. And then supporting them from thereafter.
Are there things now as a result of the Equifax breach that challenge a system like yours, given that there are so many identities now that are available and easy to use? You know, the mom and pop business that's owned by, you know, the sole proprietor who's walking in to get an account or phoning up or going online to get an account, how do you know that that's really the genuine person and not someone who's who has their identity, looks like them, has all the information that makes them sound like them, but in fact isn't the real them?
Yeah, really great question. So I'm one of the lucky half the, you know, half the U.S. population is breached, including myself, as I checked on the website. So, you know, we all have to take measures to some extent into our own hands to make sure, you know, identity isn't being used in the wrong way. But on the business side, if someone does have, you know, Anatoly Kunitsky's data, if that person has it, what they might not have is maybe my passport or my phone number. So in the past year, we actually added a feature so you can upload a picture of any government-issued ID, and then even we call it a selfie check, for lack of a better word, where you can take a picture and using facial recognition, we can match up the picture against the government-issued ID as well. So even though they might have my address, you know, my date of birth, hopefully not my SSN, but just in case even my SSN, you know, that last mile where you have to upload a picture of yourself in real time and a document might stop the bad guy from using that data. And then secondarily, most credit bureaus don't actually have your phone number. So we've been adding carrier data very, very aggressively around the world so that we can verify your information, like your name, your address, against your phone number as well. So from a business perspective, we get a lot of calls about this of our current customers, like how do we make sure someone in the U.S. isn't using hacked data to sign up for a service. And the exact recommendations we make are you can do either one, do a document verification plus a selfie check, and then two, add in a phone number to verify the phone number against the name, address, DOB, because typically a credit bureau does not have the phone number tied to your credit data.
Interesting. But isn't that easy enough to get? I feel like everybody's phone numbers are just out there in the wild. It doesn't take much to actually find out what my mobile number is. I mean, it's on my email signature for one, but you know, people use their mobile number now as their only number in so many cases. Is that easy enough for hackers to get, the fraudsters to get?
It is, but then tying it back, you know, in one swoop to your things like address and date of birth is not. So, like myself, I keep my actual cell phone number, email signature, you know, but it doesn't include, you know, my home address and my, you know, date of birth. With some digging, yes, you can, but then again, you know, the first recommendation is, you know, if you add some form of document verification plus a real-time selfie check, like that's really hard to do, really hard to hack using the stolen data off the breach. So that's those are the exact recommendations we make to our customers today for the U.S.
Got it. Well, let's move on to the second data point, which is highly related to this, and that's eight. That is the number of individual unique interactions between the bank and that customer during the process of actually onboarding them, authenticating who they are and getting all the documents and credentials in place. That's an awful mm-hmm. lot of back and forth.
Yes, yes. So that's you know, that's why you keep getting phone calls. If anyone's ever opened a personal like or business account with the bank, that's what they'll ask for. You know, they'll call you up, hey, I just forgot one thing. Can you please send over your documents of registration or you know, the state of incorporation? Now, those kind of things, you know, all add up to, like you said, 8 touch points. Some of our, you know, the customers, again, that are onboarding merchants in less than 5 minutes today are doing all of that digitally. So they're collecting the input data like name, address, DOB, verifying that instantly, and then asking customers to enter their registration, company registration details. And we actually just launched the KYB service with Trulioo, where in over 80 countries we're able to in real time, verify that the business is indeed up and running, and then even confirm that the person signing up is one of the primary beneficiaries of that business, one of the owners, or if not the owner, of the business. And it's all done digitally, all done with that single touch point all up front. But banks today, a lot of that information is done via manual work and printouts and things like that. That's why it takes so much time and so many touch points to get through the process as is.
Yeah, I was talking to your CEO about that product. It sounds fascinating. I love the story of actually what it took to get it up and running. It sounds like it should be so easy until he described scenarios where corporate ID numbers were being used in different jurisdictions in the same country for different businesses. So that must have been fun.
Yes, it is. You know, my favorite part about demoing the Know Your Business product for customers, perspective or current, is, you know, I always tell them, like, on my KYC, when you guys have seen it, we're going to do real data because it's company information is actually all public, a public domain. So they're like, oh, do our company. I'm like, sure, let's do it. And they're like, actually, no, wait, do your company, do Truly You. So I'm like, okay, sure, you know, happy to share information that's already public. So it's quite different. Where what we make easier is doing it all digitally and instantly. So instead of sitting there, you know, typing in the information that your customers already provided you, it's all done through the original customer inputs and then real-time APIs all verified. So that's the real difference. But completely different from the KYC and really, in my opinion, funny reactions to when people first see it.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And that kind of leads to the third data point, which is 60 million. I mean, this is a big number. This is the typical financial firm's cost of compliance in making sure that customer or that business is really, in fact, who they say they are. Obviously, that's on the low end. Some can, depending on volume, can spend much, much more, $500 million. But that's a function of this 8 different back and forth interactions and all the other things that perhaps are a little more tedious for companies to go through that haven't automated the process.
Yeah, that's right. So the reason that number is so high is because compliance and most banks, most financial institutions doesn't really have a budget, because doing it wrong once can cost, you know, someone their job or the compliance officer even actual jail time, like in the case with MoneyGram, and the fines can be so tremendous they can send a company, you know, right to bankruptcy. I'll give an example. Now, this is all public information. So this happened to PayPal in about between 2010 and 2013. They got fined roughly $7 million for some things they missed relating to AML compliance, and the total amount of those transactions was under $30,000.
Wow.
So just the sheer magnitude of how much you can get fined for doing it wrong really makes, you know, that budget, you know, just unlimited, because it's the cost of doing business, which is today why most of the top 10 banks have well into the tens of thousands of employees somehow related to compliance, because just the amount of fines, and some of them publicly have been fined well into the billions, just far outweighs, you know. So when you put it in that perspective, you know, a $60 million budget or even $300 million budget annually is still a lot better than getting fined by the government for messing it up.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's a serious and a very, very important area to pay attention to. For all the right reasons. Let me ask you a question about some of the things now that are perhaps emerging and require KYC, but maybe in a different sense. And I'm thinking about ICOs, these initial coin offerings that are popping up all over the place. What's your experience with that, and what's involved that may be different from your standard run-of-the-mill KYC, KYB check?
Yeah, great, really great question. So when we think about AML KYC, we always think about banks, right? But we saw this about 2 years ago when marketplaces started getting big. Those guys realized they have an AML KYC. And then probably the latter half of this year, starting in the summer, we've seen decentralized companies doing ICOs or token generating events realize that they also have a KYC liability. So anytime your service or whatever transaction you're doing is moving money from person to person, there's an AML KYC liability. So for a compliant ICO, I'm going to disregard all the securities laws, but they have to do typically two things. One is to make sure, particularly in the U.S., that it's an accredited investor, and then two, knowing every single person, whether they're giving you $1 or $1 million, who that individual are, even though cryptocurrency is by nature, doesn't have identity tied to it, you still need to know who you're doing business with if you actually, want to avoid, when the regulators do eventually come down on the ICO market. So we've been seeing a lot of new companies coming to us, sometimes in the 2, 3, 4, 5 per day that need KYC help as they're doing an ICO, because they're essentially doing transactions between person to person where there's an AML KYC liability for them.
Wow. And what other checks do you do that go beyond, the typical KYC AML? You mentioned accredited investor. Do you have to prove that this individual is capable of making an investment? Is that a different slant to what you typically do?
Yeah, that is. So we do not do that check, but I believe AngelList has an API for that, and most of the time these companies just collect either your bank account statement or a pay stub or like a 1099 or something like that to manually check that you're an accredited investor. So there's a really great business there somewhere for someone to automate that process more. But the other side, the KYC side, is where we really excel. And since ICOs, I mean, U.S. is barely the number one country for crypto. Then it's Australia, Japan, and other parts of Asia, Korea, all really popular. And that's why we actually cover all of those regions for knowing who that company is taking money from, which is how we support the global ICO market for as far as the compliance piece goes.
What are some of the things that are really influencing the space in terms of compliance and AML? I mean, obviously we know what some of the obvious and bigger trends are. Are there other things that you're focused on that perhaps other people aren't so focused on because they're looking at a much bigger picture than you are?
So we actually took a really holistic view to the company. This goes credit to our founders, Stephen Ufford and Tanish George. They really saw that most data providers, as far as credit bureaus go, really focused on covering G5 markets. But the G5 markets are just 30% of the population. So the company was started on a mission to be able to verify all 7+ billion people in the entire world. And we're about 4.5 billion of the way there. And that's really to help, unlock financial products for kind of the new emerging markets. Like, we were the first company to launch in identity verification in China, then in India, and then most recently in South Korea even. So that, again, all financial products, and that goes beyond payments and banks. It also goes into marketplaces, and then things like crypto can all start because of global KYC. So we think we play a really important role in unlocking those services. Some of the same stuff we take here for granted in Boston or in San Francisco or anywhere in the G5 markets, and we actually think we play a really important role in helping the underbanked, open up their first bank account or, doing their first e-commerce transaction or even becoming a merchant themselves and taking payments from other people. It all starts with the verification up front, and that's where we come in across over 60, 70 countries today.
It's an interesting challenge, particularly in markets where there isn't an established reporting, credit reporting bureau that is amassing information, setting aside the unfortunate situation with Equifax. But, it does serve a purpose for collecting information provided by financial institutions on, consumers' behavior with, with paying their bills. What data then is the data that helps you, in the absence of that, verify identity and also prove other things that credit reporting agencies in the G5 countries are able to prove?
Yeah, great question. So in places like China, there's no credit bureau, but there's still a really strong data source, and that's the Chinese government, surprise, surprise. And same goes for India. The credit bureaus are still relatively young, like less than 5 years of age. But India actually has one of the strongest identity systems in the world, thanks to its government and the program Aadhaar. So in places like that, you can still verify 90%+ of the population. Now, the next leg, we think, outside of credit, outside of government data, is then carrier data. There are more people with cell phones today than there are people with credit reports, like you said, Karen. So the next leg to cover that next, what we have left, about 2.5 billion people, we think is through carrier data. And then since those people may or may not have computers, they can start doing mobile transactions, mobile onboarding, or mobile payments right via their phone. And because the data is available via their carrier. So that's the strategy that we as Trulioo have taken on to unlock further and further more and more people to go from unbanked into the into the financial system as it is today.
What are some of the latest and greatest on AML and money laundering? Are there any disturbing trends that we haven't been paying attention to that have crossed your radar?
There's a lot of different use cases that that people don't really think about when it goes to AML KYC. I'll use an example. The most expensive book on Amazon, I think I checked this a few months ago, it's about $20,000. So as you can imagine, someone can put up a book, a one-page PDF for $20,000, and then someone you're trying to launder money through can go ahead and buy that book and then pay you minus the fee of the, of the marketplace. So as you can see, there's any marketplace can become a way to launder money. My second favorite example is actually a poker room. So say you and I, Karen, are trying to move money from one person to another, and then we're playing online poker, and then, you're sitting, we also have a text message chat, and you're sitting on a royal flush, and I'm sitting on a pair of twos or something like that, which is, for non-poker players, a really, really bad hand, and you have the best hand possible. I'm like, okay, great, I'm going to go all in. So then you can take my money via this online poker room. So it's really just the imagination of the bad guys of how they're using money laundering. And then cryptocurrency is a really obvious example. We saw, first for both laundering and illegal activities on Silk Road, and there's still some use cases as that world is catching up to AML KYC. But the ways to fight it, the ways to combat all of that are there. It's just a matter of new industries and new companies, waking up to the compliance risks that they face as businesses that they might not be aware of. So that's really the risk, the risk that I see in the space.
But these guys are obviously very, very clever, and it almost suggests that you have to be monitoring every possible thing that is legitimate, because the bad guys will figure out a way to game the system.
You're absolutely right. The most of that work is done up front. So most of that work is done to make sure you actually know who you're doing business with. So we even do, like in China, we even do bank account verification to make sure that, okay, you identified the person, but is this bank account this person's as well? So, and then again, we're going, the next part of the strategy is around phone number two. Most of the work is done upfront. The companies that are fighting it well, are verifying every single person that they do business with. And if they're not able to verify them, or if there's hits on watch lists and the data doesn't look good, they don't let them in the platform, even though, you know, obviously every company wants as many people as possible to help their growth rates. The best ones take a really conservative approach as far as AML KYC compliance goes and the people that they let in. So in our view, most of the work, 90-some-odd percent of the work goes up front, and then it's just to make sure you have the monitoring systems in place thereafter. So that's really, really, how you fight. It's just a matter of new businesses and young businesses who are often targets of bad guys, just realizing that they have, you know, the same risk as, you know, a large, you know, Chase or Citibank does, as well as far as AML KYC compliance goes.
Is it your sense, totally, that we're, as an industry, we're winning? Are we making progress?
As an industry, well, we are. So it's definitely top of mind. I always half kidding goes, you know, our governments can agree on a lot of things, but they can agree that money laundering is bad. And about 2.5 to 2.5% of the global GDP, which is about $1.2 trillion annually, is done through money laundering. And that's because the governments cannot tax on that money. So it's actually really, really simple why no government likes it. With that, every government comes down on companies that are not doing their absolute best to meet AML KYC. With that said, historically and a lot of times today, that problem is being solved via manual labor. Like if a bank has an issue, it's like, okay, we'll hire another 1,000 people. Like I believe Chase has somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 open recs for compliance employment at their company today. No joke. So they carry, okay, let's hire more people, let's throw more people at it. When a lot of times the technology is actually the answer and they can do a much better job today. Like the AI systems which we use today for like the KYB and document verification is much better than a person manually reviewing documents. So we are to an extent doing really well as an industry, but there's still a ways to go, and a good place to start would be taking out some of the manual processes and moving into more digital processes would actually work even better than what you and I can do versus AI learning system.
Yeah, no, for sure, and it seems like a very good use case for that technology. Well, Tolly, it was very nice to chat with you today and to get all the data and the story behind the data on a very important issue, KYC, KYB, and everything and anything we can do to eliminate fraud and the instances of bad guys doing bad things by skirting the system. Thanks for all of your great insight today.
And thank you, Karen. And thank you for continuing to support TrulyU and our cause to help the financial and non-financial universe.
Yes, well, it's our pleasure to do that. Thanks again, and thanks everyone who listened today. I hope you have a great rest of the day and a good week. Thank you.